God himself, the Lamb.
Let's begin by reading from Genesis 17, verses 9 through 11. Genesis 17, verses 9 through 11. And God said to Abraham, "As for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised. And you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you." In Genesis 17, we see some further developments in the Abrahamic covenant narrative. God establishes new procedures and affixes them to that covenant which began back in chapter 12. We learn specifically in this chapter about a covenantal sign, and we'll note why that's significant right here in just a moment.
God will provide himself a lamb, the only sacrifice that sin demands, just as he proved to Abraham he would provide himself a lamb. Behold the Lamb, God himself the Lamb.
In Genesis 16, we witness a diversion in God's way of accomplishing his will when Abram and Sarai used their own wisdom and reasoning to fulfill the promise God had made to them. Sarai had suggested that Abram could have a child with her handmaiden, Hagar. This will ultimately prove to be great folly and would bring devastating consequences upon their household. One of those consequences may have been a delay in God fulfilling the promise he had made to the couple many years earlier. In fact, Dr. James Smith points out that a 13-year gap exists between Genesis 16 and 17. Those years of divine silence may have been intended as chastisement to Abram for his participation in Sarai's scheme. Abram was 99 when the Lord appeared to him once again. Like chapter 15, Genesis 17 focuses on the institution and confirmation of the covenant. The chapter is full of promise. God is the speaker, Abram offering but one exclamatory comment. And so we pick up on the heels of this long bridge, this long gap of silence, with Genesis 17 opening with these words. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, "I am Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless. And I will make my covenant between me and you, and will multiply you exceedingly." Then Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, "As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram. Your name shall be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations." For the first time in the Bible, the Lord identified himself to Abram as Almighty God, there in verse 1. Now, this comes from the Hebrew expression El Shaddai. And this expression, this name of the Lord, has been the subject of much controversy and debate. In the scriptures, the name and person of God are inseparably related. And in the passages where El Shaddai is used, Baker Encyclopedia of the Bible points out that, quote, "the combined ideas of God as the all-powerful, all-sufficient, transcendent, sovereign ruler and disposer are present." In Genesis 17, the covenant is reaffirmed between the Lord and Abram. And to signify this reaffirmation of the covenant, everybody in the chapter gets a new name. For the Lord, it's El Shaddai, Almighty God. For Abram, his name is also changed to Abraham. And this is meant to signify, as the name Abraham is defined, that he would be the father of many nations. He would have a multitude descending from him. Five new elements appear in this amplification of the covenant details, according to Dr. Smith. Number one, Abram was to be the father, not of one nation through Ishmael, but of many nations. To commemorate this aspect of the promise, Abram was to change his name to Abraham. The change was greater in sense than in sound. Abram, meaning exalted father, became Abraham, meaning father of a multitude. The new name universalized Abram's experience, for he is to be the father of many nations. Not only nations, but kings would come from the loins of Abraham, verse 6 tells us. Later prophecies identify one of those kings as the anointed one par excellence, the Messiah. Now, Dr. Smith goes on to summarize the next few verses in this way. Number three, that is the third reaffirmation of the covenant, or the third element of the covenant here being expounded upon. God's special covenant relationship with Abraham would continue throughout the generations of his descendants. The covenant was an everlasting covenant, literally a covenant enduring to the far distant future. The essence of the covenant was summed up in the promise to be the God of Abraham and his descendants after him. Besides gifts of grace, which he pours out, God gives himself freely to his people. And finally, Dr. Smith says, though Abraham has been for almost a quarter of a century a stranger in the land, God would give him and his descendants all the land of Canaan as an everlasting possession, that is, one which would extend into the distant future, verse 8. And so we see all of these covenantal ideas, these promises that go back to chapter 12, being reaffirmed and expanded upon by the Lord after this long 13 years of silence between chapter 16 and chapter 17. Now, in previous videos, we have touched on the idea of covenants. A covenant, in its most basic and simplistic way of understanding, is a contract. It's an arrangement between two parties. Most, though not all, we'll see in a few chapters, of the biblical covenants are made between God and men. This, of course, inherently makes them imbalanced. God is the perfect covenant keeper, but man, we mess up, we stray from the path that God has set before us. Yet in His mercy, in His grace, in His love, God acquiesces. He descends to our level. This was seen back in Genesis 15, when God told Abraham to hew all those animals in half and set them out with a path between them. Who was it that walked through the animals? Normally, both parties of the covenant would do that in the ancient custom. Yet when Abram awoke from his sleep and his vision, he saw God as a billowing smoking oven passing through those animals. So God comes down to our level to make covenants with us, to make arrangements with his people. Now there are a number of elements to biblical covenants. There are, of course, promises. And that goes back to Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3. God said, I'm going to give you a land, I'm going to give you a nation, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That's the gospel, the announcement of the Messiah. Covenants also have terms and conditions. Both parties, God and man, are required to fulfill their obligations. We see this in Genesis 15 and verse 6. When it says that Abram believed God and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And also in chapter 18, verses 17 through 19, when God told Abraham he was expected to follow his decrees. Another element of covenants is blood ratification. That is, a sacrifice has to be made to ratify the covenant. That happened back in chapter 15, as we've noted. But now here, a fourth element of biblical covenants is added, and that is a sign. A sign was meant to be a physical reminder that the covenant existed. It was something that individuals could look upon and remember, God has made a covenant with us. The first covenant sign mentioned in the Bible is back in Genesis 9, the sign of the rainbow. God told Noah, I'll never again flood the earth, and when you look at the rainbow, you remember my sacred promise, my covenant not to flood the earth ever again. But here in this chapter, we have a new covenant sign being given to Abraham and his descendants. That is the sign of circumcision. Let's read verses 15 and 16. Then God said, this is after the giving of circumcision, God said to Abraham, "As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. And I will bless her and also give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall be from her." I told you, everyone's getting a name. God is El Shaddai, Abram is Abraham, and now Sarai is Sarah. There's some uncertainty about the difference between Sarai and Sarah. Both of the names really kind of essentially mean princess. But the point in this chapter is that God is including Sarah, not just Abraham. He's including Sarah as part of the covenantal process. Sarah is involved in this divine new work in an energetic and exciting way. As Warren Wiersbe says, we must not minimize the place of Sarah in God's great plan of salvation. Like her husband and all of us, she had her faults. But also like her husband, she trusted God and accomplished his purposes, says Hebrews 11 and verse 11. So there's a new birth announcement in this passage, not with Hagar would the promised son come upon the earth, but through Sarah, she shall be the mother of this promised child. Now, normally a birth announcement like this would bring great joy and jubilation, but Abraham's joy was very quickly held back and soured a bit at his realization and concern for his young teenage son, now 13 years of age, Ishmael. Verse 18, Abraham said, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before you." However, God's plan would focus not on Ishmael. Verse 19 says, "Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his descendants after him." Now, God didn't abandon Ishmael. In fact, God blessed him. God would make him a father of a nation, and he would be great. But the covenantal blessings would pass through Sarah, through Isaac, and on down through Abraham's continuing descendants. The chapter concludes with 99-year-old Abraham, 13-year-old Ishmael, and all the male servants of his household being circumcised. And I'm going to emphasize this a few more times in this study. One of the most amazing things about Abraham was the speed at which he obeyed difficult commands. Sometimes God asks us to do some things that are hard, they're challenging, they're difficult, and we might not be naturally inclined to obey. Abraham was the same, yet he overcame that natural inclination not to obey by following the Lord wherever he led. In this case, he did not tarry, he did not delay. He took his household and obeyed the command of God to have them circumcised so that the covenantal sign would be upon them for the rest of their days. Now, friends, we can do likewise, speedily and readily obeying the Lord, even when it's not easy to do it.
Although Abraham could not understand how God in his great love could ask him for the only son he had. Yet when it seemed to him all hope was dim, his faith, this promise sank.